Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Livek Pone, joined for the very first time in the brand new studio, Ashley Titians.
Yes, it's like really cool to be in here, because I know last week, the first time we were doing this, I was remote in Orlando at the trials, and it looked so cool, but now I'm like, whoa, like it's actually pretty cool in here. So.
It's an awesome setup. Mm-hmm, like sure. I said, it's just like a three-part setup in one, but I love the comfy chairs. More space. We were in a closet before. It served its purpose.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited that you're finally back, and we're here to kick off another great episode of the Flow Track Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to talk to a world record holder who will be joining us. We're going to recap the U.S. marathon trials that occurred in Orlando, which Ashley had a chance to cover on the ground. We're going to discuss our biggest takeaways from the New Balance Grand Prix. And of course, the meet that I've been like waiting for the last few weeks is the Millrose Games, and we're going to be on the ground covering that too. So I feel like every show I say it's a great show because there's so much that happened. So let's dive into everything. But Ashley, once again, we have a very special guest joining us today.
Yes, we do. Today we are joined by none other than Hobbs Kessler, who won the men's 1500 this weekend at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix, 3:33.66, a U.S. number 3 all-time mark indoors in this event. He's also, as you mentioned earlier, he's the Road Mile World record holder after winning that event at the World Road Running Championships last year. And great news, he's going to be a headliner this weekend in the Wanamaker Mile at Millrose Games. Hobbs, thanks for joining us. We're super excited to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's just like start with like the immediate news. Obviously, a whole bunch of us watched you race at New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. You lined up against a loaded field in that 1500, you know, and you won that title at 3:33.66, one of the fastest times ever recorded by American in that event indoors. I'm just curious, like, you know, how did you approach this race and what was going through your mind and how did that play out for you?
Well, one of the big things is I need an Olympic standard. So I was really hoping to get that, which I actually didn't end up getting. But training was going really well, and I want to kind of show that off. You never really know what you're going to get based on training alone. So I'm just happy to have a good result to indicate to myself that I'm fit.
Yeah, I think that was excellent. You had a very loaded field too. So I bet how much did that kind of boost your confidence just knowing you had a big win against a really strong field as well?
Yeah, it feels good to win. that's for sure. I really kind of set out the goal to try to win more of these races and not just kind of be a contender. So whether I win or go down swinging, it's all like, I feel like working towards that goal of just trying to be a little more dominant domestically and learn to win races.
Yeah. And like, I think another thing too, is I was watching that race and I'm obviously you were racing at someone like Jake Whiteman, who's obviously a world champion in that event outdoors. And from the way I saw it, like, you just, I mean, you led for, you were behind that pacer the entire time. And then by the end, I mean, you were putting a gap on him. Have you been working on some of that closing speed and just to be able to take, you know, take down a competitor like that, that's obviously been, you know, on that world stage, you know, what was, you know, kind of your reaction to that as well?
Yeah, I mean, to be a guy of Jake's caliber is definitely a big deal for me, because I haven't really, so far in my career, I haven't been competitive with that level of people yet. So that felt really good. I have been working on the closing speed, doing a few different things to address it, and just making some adjustments in training. I mean, really aerobic strength is the biggest factor that goes into being able to kick, because, I mean, every good miler can probably run a 36-second 300, but running a 40-second or a 41-second 300 tired is what wins races. So feeling fresh later in the race felt really good. And I was glad I had that kick, and I'm glad some of that training has been paying off.
With all that being said, training, focusing on the kick, you take down Jake Whiteman. Like, I feel like that kind of boosts your confidence. I feel like it would boost my confidence just going in for the remainder of the season. Where do you think how do you feel like you're doing right now currently with just putting all the performances together, kind of getting the rust off, really focusing on this Olympic year? Do you feel like things are going as planned with where you are right now?
Yeah, things have gone remarkably smooth. It feels like so far in my career, like, I've had everything planned out in a certain way I want it to go. And, whether you just don't respond to the training, or you get sick, or you get hurt, or whatever it may be, things haven't gone smooth in the past. So for us to lay everything out and everything go pretty much according to plan, obviously there's some adjustments and hiccups in there, but overall pretty smooth. It feels great. And that really gives me confidence.
Yeah.
For the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I know, too, you were mentioning to us before, you know, we went live on this call, like, you just spent a month, I believe, in Flagstaff training up there as well at altitude. So what was that, you know, how do you think some of that training and getting in that altitude training is going to help you for the rest of indoor? Because obviously you have some big goals for indoor, but then into outdoor as well.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time there the last, really since I've been a pro, I've spent about half my time in Flagstaff. Part of that's altitude. Part of that's just, I just like living there and I like my life there, so... a little bit of both, but kind of the more times I go up, and the older I get, the more I figure out about how to kind of optimize it, and optimize my training while I'm up there, and, really try to get the most out of it. So I don't know. I hope to keep learning, but, yeah.
Yeah. Just embracing all the moments and just falling in love with the process and also with Flagstaff. I think that's great. So I want to take us back 4 months ago, Hobbs. That's when you broke the world record in the road mile. I have to know the thought process behind this. Were you kind of striving for that, or do you feel like everything just came together at the right moment? The training has been on point, and boom, here you go. You got the world record.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone kind of knew whoever won that race was going to end up with the world record, just because it was a brand new, record. So it was pretty underdeveloped, and I still think it's pretty underdeveloped. I think it can really be pushed a lot faster. That being said, it felt great to win a world championship, and, it has been fun being the record holder. I'm not super attached to it again. I think it's more circumstance rather than the time itself. Mm-hmm. The course they had set up in Lafayette and all that, I think you could do it a lot better as far as trying to maximize a road course, mm-hmm. and just some other factors that you get rabbits in there and stuff to really pull it along. So it's been fun, but I'm not attached to it. I won't be too bummed to see it go. I hope I can get it back, and if I could push it under 350 at some point in my career, that'd be pretty cool. But for the moment, I'm just happy to be the world champ in the event.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sure. You're already a world champion. And I feel too, it feels like you've been on this scene for so long, but also when you look at the numbers, you really haven't been on that pro scene for too terribly long. I mean, shoot, it wasn't that long ago that you were in high school, obviously racing against pros and stuff, but I mean, I'm just kind of curious, like, what has that transition and experience been like for you over the past couple of years, just trying to get those reps in and being, you know, training as a pro and all that? And how do you think you've learned a lot from that, you know, going forward with your pro career?
Yeah, I mean, when I initially signed, like, you're on top of the world, like, you feel like you're invincible and you're just going to, like, keep getting better and better. And I will say everything was a lot, like, harder and, like, sloppier and took longer. That like, as far as, like, just adjusting my new life than I thought it was going to be in it. And just, like, fitness-wise and, like, just nothing went as smooth as I thought it would. And I guess that was a good life lesson. I feel like I'm starting to come out the other side now, kind of taking my hits. But it's been fun. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot, and I'm really thinking I'm starting to figure out how to get, like, consistently good at running, mm-hmm. And consistently competitive.
I have a follow up to your remarks there, and I feel like we've seen a couple of high school kids go pro, like, as soon as they graduate, they go, some of them go collegiate for a couple years and they go pro. How difficult was it for you to kind of make that adjustment from going to the high school level? And of course you made your verbal commitment at the time, and then all of a sudden you went pro. How difficult was it for you to just adjust to that new training style? And of course you mentioned you got hit, but now we're seeing you kind of blossom into the Hobbs Kessler that we're like, okay, this looks like the Hobbs Kessler that we're used to seeing. So just how challenging was that for you, if you don't mind speaking on that?
Yeah. I mean, it was hard, like, and I'm sure it's hard for people in the NCAA system. I think very few people who have a breakout year followed up the next year with the same improvement or even the same level. Like, it's so hard to follow up a breakout no matter where you're at. And in the NCAA, like, there's a coach take care of everything for you. Like, physios planned out, lift, like, you don't really have to do much, like, travel, everything. You're with, like, people your own age, and, like, maybe more appropriate competition for your fitness and ability level. So it was hard, because all of a sudden I went from being a high schooler to being up against people that were, like, this was their life. Like, yeah, this is how they supported their family. And really, like, hardworking, talented, smart athletes. And I just wasn't quite ready yet. It's taken a few years, but I think I'm getting there now. But again, if I went to NAU, I could have had the same transition. Again, it's hard to follow up those big breakout years. I think if I were to do it again, like, I would just have to go in understanding, like, it's going to be hard and things aren't always going to go my way. And it's just, like, be patient. It'll come out the other end. And just try not to make the same mistakes twice.
Well, obviously that patience has paid off, because here we are sitting here talking with you about New Balance Grand Prix. And now you're going to be contesting at Millrose Games this weekend in the Watermaker Mile. And as we've all seen, like, that's going to be a loaded race. You're going to have people like Yard and Neguse in that race and potentially trying to chase after new American record, new world record, who knows? So I'm just curious for you, like, what's your plan of attack for this race upcoming this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like, I don't want to be another person on the starting line. Like, I want to be a contender for the win. So however the race plays out, I want to be there, like, gritting my teeth with 50 meters to go, trying to win the thing. So we'll see. Again, everyone has their race plan. The races rarely play out how you think they are. So however it goes, I'm ready for it. I'm excited, and I got a lot of confidence coming off this last weekend.
Hobbs, are we going for a world record? I just need to know. Yes or no?
No, I'll go along for the ride if Yard's going for it. But I think he's got control of the Pacers.
Okay, my next question to you is, hypothetically, let's just say this world record does go down. What do you think it's going to take? Like, how much... I know there's going to be a lot of energy. The crowd is definitely going to be involved, but how fast do you think this mile could potentially go this weekend?
I really, like, I don't know if I can speak to it. I mean, George Mills is in the race. He just broke 13 on the 5K, and he wasn't, like, never known as being particularly aerobically strong. So he's been working really hard and has shown really good fitness. Yard is always seems to be in great shape. I think probably the fitness and the talent is there. A lot of other things, they have good rabbits, good energy, and just like little details in the race have to work out. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if someone managed to break it, but also, I don't know, who knows? I think it'll be a good race no matter what though. And I hope it's not defined by just the world record. You know, I hope it's like a good, fun, entertaining, scrappy race.
Well, I know we're going to be excited to see that race in person. So super excited for that. But, you know, looking beyond Melrose too, you know, what is your goals for the remainder of the indoor season? I know we heard you're eyeing that, you know, you want to make that world indoor team, I believe. So talk to me a little bit about what the thought process is going for, you know, the next weeks of indoor.
Yeah. I mean, like kind of looking back, when we were planning out this indoor season, I'm kind of viewing it as mental training, tactics training, whatever you want to call it, for the Olympic trials and hopefully the Olympics and all the other races I'll experience this summer. So most of training your conditioning and fitness, but I want to be putting myself in these stressful situations like before, where I'm like, question, like, why am I doing this before the race? And then like get through it and learn I can kind of handle it. Cause racing is going to be hard and stressful and you're going to be nervous in the hotel room all day before. And so I really want to train that cause it's, that's something I'm going to experience and there's no way around it. So I can just kind of build my mental, resilience with being able to handle that. And then just racing tactics, racing instincts, and just getting comfortable with the whole process. So I think the better I can get at that whole thing, the better shot I have at making the Olympic team and doing well at the Olympics if I make it. So, the US Championships is next. And I think that'll be a great opportunity to kind of like learn some more tactics, do some things right, probably do some things wrong, but really hope I have a good shot at the team and can go to Glasgow and get some more international experience. Mm-hmm.
I love that. So how important is it for you to kind of just like take that next step in making this world indoor team? Just like you said, making this Olympic team, that's the big goal that everyone is talking about. So just how has this kind of been a stepping stone in the right direction for you as we approach the Olympics too?
Yeah, I mean, like the fitness is there. Now it's just all about the racing. So everything's kind of set in motion. If I can do it, I'd be stoked. Great momentum heading into the spring. But it is just that. It's just a stepping stone. But I'm really viewing this as a just practice and learning and all that. Wow, what do you call it? All that nonsense, you know.
All right, Hobbs, before we let you go, we have a very tough question to ask you before you leave. We ask a variation of this question to all of our guests before they leave on the podcast. And I'm going to tweak it a little bit for you. Do you prefer running on the track or running on the roads? Because obviously you've done both. And why?
Like racing?
Yeah, racing. Racing.
I mean, I've done a lot of racing. I'm a little over it at the moment. I think I probably did like 5 or 6 road miles last year. So I'm going to go track.
Okay.
These road miles, but I do love a road mile, and I'm really happy that it's becoming more and more of an event.
I love that. Hobbs, before we let you go, actually, because I'm reading the chat right now and people are like cheering for you, but someone actually made a comment about you climbing and they were like, I don't think people know that you used to be a nationally ranked youth climber. How is that? What was that experience like? And do you still have a chance to do that too?
Yeah, I mean, that is like most of my athletic background is climbing.
Yeah.
I still try to do as much as possible. In October, I kind of had the goal for myself. I broke 4 minutes on October 1st, and my kind of goal, I was like, I want to climb 5:14 by the end of the month of October, like do it in the same month. And I was really confident I could do it. And then I spent probably 10, 12 days outside climbing,
wow.
trying to do it. And I had no idea how to climb in shape I was and got nowhere close. I wasn't super confident, but yeah, I mean, I hope I have a lot of good days outside climbing in my future. Luckily the rocks aren't going anywhere anytime soon. So
That is for sure.
That is awesome.
That's
fun
cool.
Fact.
I don't think I could do that. Climbing, absolutely not.
No.
No way. I don't have that upper body
strength.
That's
a lot of upper body strength. And I feel like it's also grip strength, too.
Yeah.
And I don't
know.
I don't know if my hands can. Yeah, no. Well, Hobbs, thank you so much for your time today. And like the chat has said, they're rooting for you, just like we're rooting for you as well. So can't wait to see you this weekend at Millrose in New York City. And safe travels to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Wow. All right, we have a climber on our hands. That's awesome. So great things from Hobbs Kessler. We're super excited to see what he does. And of course, just a lot of great things that happen. But of course, we have to dive into the U.S. Marathon trials, Ashley, because it was like the highlight of the weekend. And I just want to know, we haven't really had a chance to, like, you and I personally just talk about the stories, all the fun things. So I'm going to open up the floor to you about Orlando. And I saw a lot of people were dropping out. I know our other producer, Amanda, we were texting back and forth and like people were dropping like flies. But from your perspective, just how did the races go as a whole?
I mean, honestly, I feel like in Orlando, there were some things that played out as expected, and then other things that were like so you could have never guessed that happening in like any day of the week, right? So let's start, I guess, with the men's race there. I feel like, so going in, obviously the storyline was like, all right, Connor and Clayton Young, they have, you know, they have this standard here. They, if they just get those top two spots, they're going to Paris. It's all they really need to do. And that's exactly what they did, right? You know, they go in and they get that done, and it was pretty, you know, they were kind of, it was like one of those races where at the end, like Clayton was joking. He's like, oh, I let Connor win and just like let him go ahead, even though I felt better, which was interesting. But so that, you know, that played out as expected. What didn't play out as expected was the fact that you have Zach Panning, of all people, going out and leading the majority of that race and doing all the grunt work and making it a decently quick marathon. And then you have Lenny Career coming up. I believe he was sixth with 2 miles to go, and he ends up finishing third and puts on a huge surge at the end. So that's kind of where I feel like on the men's side, it got a little interesting, and there's a little bit of drama in that.
Yeah.
I know you were probably watching at home. What were your thoughts from watching it at home?
There was a lot of drama.
A lot of drama.
Like you said. But I think it was just, like we talked about, we knew last show that we didn't know, I personally didn't know how this was going to unfold, because the only two people that have hit the standard are Connor Mance and Clayton Young. And it was just like, for them, they just needed to finish. It was just like, show up, run the race, finish.
They just had to get top two, to get those unlocked spots that they unlocked.
Exactly. Because they went 209.05, 209.06, go 1-2. So it kind of opened up that opportunity. Like, the people just had to run fast. And so it was like, I didn't know how the pace was going to be just because it was so hot. Wasn't it like 60 when the race started?
Yeah, it was interesting. So like, it definitely, I mean, when it started, I think the high was in the 60s. The humidity wasn't like bad. But then I'll tell you, when I was out there, then the last probably like 30 minutes of both races, like I was standing out by the finish ready to take photos. Like I was sweating.
Yeah.
Sweating. Like the sun was beating down. It definitely got really warm. The conditions, like, those wouldn't be necessarily favorable conditions for a marathon on any given day. And so I think to see how the races played out, especially, I know we'll talk about the women's side in a minute, but to see how fast that race went for the women, like, that was interesting. And then, again, for the men, like, I said this earlier, like, the key to this race and to see them go, like, decently quick, it was Zach Panning, because he was the one that said, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go out there and lead this race. And he just pulled Connor and Clayton along for such a long time. And even they acknowledged it in the press conference afterwards. They're like, that race would not have been like that if it wasn't for Zach Panning being really gutsy and putting, you know, everything he had into that race and trying to make it a fast one. And unfortunately, Panning would end up kind of fading there at the end and getting sixth. But like, if not for that move and like him leading for the majority of the way, like, we would not have seen that race play out that way, I don't think.
I applaud the gutsy racing.
Yes.
I really do. And I know I'm the outside looking in because I'm not trying to qualify for the Olympics right now. But I feel like whenever someone takes a risk like that, I have to applaud you, because you just did something outside your comfort zone. You just learned from that experience. I want to talk about Leonard real quick, just because just because you finish top three does not mean you make it to the Olympics. And especially right now, because he doesn't have the automatic qualifying standard time of 2:08.10. So in order for him to make it, he has to make sure he has enough points in the world rankings from World Athletics by May 5th, or get the third spot by becoming and unlocking the U.S. men's top five finish at any of the remaining platinum level marathons with during that qualification.
And it's interesting though, because as long as any American hits that time and unlocks it, he goes.
Yeah.
Because the USATF has said they're going to honor the order of the trials. So it doesn't matter if, you know, say someone goes out to Boston. This is a crazy example, but like, say you go out to Boston and you're going to run 2:08.10 or whatever, and it unlocks, then it's career that's going to go to the Olympics. You know, that's kind of how it is. And so it's definitely interesting, but I know.
I feel like it's just more stressful now. Like,
it is just complicated.
I'm just like thinking, I just ran at trials, and then it, like, obviously that third spot for grabs. Anybody behind you could potentially go.
Well, career's going. Like, there's, okay. He got that third spot. USATF has said he's going to get it. It doesn't matter if someone else gets the standard. No, so and that's what I was trying to say is he doesn't have to do it again. Uh-huh. Any American can go run that standard, and then he's going to get in. He doesn't have to necessarily run again.
So now there's just pressure.
It's just like chess. Yeah. But like, if he wants to get more, you know, points in the rankings, it'd be interesting. And we'll just have to see. Realistically, there probably is still a decent chance he's going to be making this team, but we'll just have to figure, you know, see what happens and plays out over the next few months. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about there's a sub like storyline with Connor Mance and Clayton Young. There's a hats thing going around.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I've read a little bit that they were both wearing hats. I think I read that right. And they put ice in it to kind of cool themselves down. But throughout the race, they kind of threw it. Like, I think, wasn't there a certain mile mark? So, like, first half of that race.
So here's kind of the story, right? Yeah. So me and Corey Moll, who was there with me covering the marathon, we were sitting there in the media tent and we saw them, you know, Connor Mance and Clayton Young line up in the start line. And the thing I've noticed, because I saw them race in Chicago, I've seen them race before, they're typically not ones that wear hats when they race. And so on the starting line, I noticed they were both wearing hats. And I think I mentioned something to Corey. I was like, oh, like, you know, I've never seen them wear a hat in a race before. And so after the marathon, Corey had a chance to speak to both of them and kind of ask them about it. Connor, they basically said, yeah, like exactly what you said. These hats were basically like ice hats in a way. So like you could like a cooling hats to keep you cool, keep your head cool. And Connor ended up ditching his like 2 miles in or something, because he's like, I don't want to mess with this anymore. But Clayton had an interesting strategy. So basically, I think it was at like certain water stations. So you would have a water bottle that wasn't filled with water, but it was stuffed with a new ice hat. So it was like these stainless steel water bottles, and he put a hat in there. And afterwards he told Corey, he was like, you know, cause he was, you know, ditching hats and grabbing new ones. He's like, hey, if anyone grabbed one of my hats, like I signed most of them, I think except for one of them. And if anyone found one of my hats and has it, like reach out to me. And the cool thing is we heard that, Brody Ansbaugh, he was volunteering at the race, and he, you know, happened to be at one of those water stations and grab one of those hats. And he ended up getting to meet Clayton Young the next day, where he was speaking at a church the day after the marathon in Orlando, and got to meet him in person and get it signed. And
that is,
you know,
so awesome.
Honestly, just such a cool story. So I'm glad we were able to report that. Good reporting by Corey Moll.
Yeah, great reporting there. That is really awesome. And I don't think we hear that often, even in the sports, like in sports in general.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think it's just so interesting, and I'm just like looking forward to other opportunities like that. Let's talk about this women's race too, because I feel like there was just a lot that happened. A lot of people dropped out leading into it. Molly Seidel is one of them that comes into mind. And so I just didn't know what to expect. But from your perspective, how did this race unfold as you're watching it on the ground?
You know, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, like there were things in the marathon on both sides that played out how we expected, like Connor Mance and Clayton Young getting their spots. But then I feel like looking at it, there are so many more questions with the men's race rather than the women's. Like, I feel like the women's had some more heavy hitters that we figured would make this team. And then the complete opposite of what we all expected happened. And we have Fiona O'Keefe winning this trials in her marathon debut. And she sets a new U.S. Olympic marathon trials record. Just wow. And then Emily Sisson, the American record holder in the marathon, she takes second. And then Dakota Lindworm sneaks in there for third. So again, like, I don't think anyone expected this to be the three that was going to the Olympics.
Right.
You know, like I think Emily Sisson, we can all agree, was like the favorite to make the team.
I think I had her in my top three.
Yes, Emily Sisson, about last week. I think most people figured she would probably try, you know, would probably win this race. Right. But I mean, there are plenty of other, you know, big hitters too, like Kira D'Amato, you know, who's been around for so many years and been consistently running well and has been a former American record holder as well. You had other people like Sarah Hall, who's been a veteran at the marathon distance for quite some time. And so again, there are a lot of heavy hitters. You had Betsy Sena as well, who's now competing for the U.S. And I believe she had ran 220-219 before. And so, yeah, I did not expect this at all. I can't emphasize enough. I've ran a marathon, but like not like obviously to the level of these people. But I feel like to win a race like that in your debut is just crazy.
Phenomenal.
And
unheard of.
They ran quickly too, considering the conditions.
Yeah. I want to just stay on Dakota really quick because I think her story is really unique. And I know we had a chance to talk about it yesterday. I feel like for everyone that watches track and field, I feel like it does not matter what your high school PRs are or what you do at the collegiate level. I think for Dakota, she just comes across as an individual who is someone that people can look up to as like someone who's persevering, hardworking, determination, and go after your dreams.
Yeah.
I don't care how fast or how slow you are, stay the course. And just when you saw her cross that finish line, can you describe what that felt like from your perspective of just like probably so much emotion that she did something like this?
Yeah, you know, I was back there in the photographer section taking photos at the finish. And, you know, obviously you saw Fiona come across the finish and win, and then Emily came across. And then all of a sudden you just see someone like, you see a figure coming, and she's just got her hands up in the air, and you could just tell just shock, like pure shock. And that was Dakota Lindworm, and she finished third. And, you know, it's like in those moments we're seeing that sort of emotions, just like it just kind of hits you, you know, like just how powerful these moments are for these athletes to reach those dreams. You know, if you're looking at this, like, let's be real, I don't think most people were, you know, looking at Dakota Lindworm's name and seeing like, hey, she's definitely going to make this team.
Right.
But she put herself in a great position. She even took the lead at points in the race because there was a big pack of women there for a good majority until probably about, you know, mile 20 or so. You know, she tried to get in the lead a couple times and then kind of sat back and then worked her way up again. And she was able to take third. And you could just tell, like, the moment just meant so much to her. And it was a dream come true.
I love that. Great stories.
Mm-hmm.
So great storylines.
Yes.
Across the board.
Yes.
How do we rate Orlando?
How do we rate Orlando? Are we rating the city or?
Let's do the city and vibes. You know I'm all about the vibes. City, how was the city? You were there for a hot minute. You were there for almost a week.
I was there for almost a week. I will say, like, the actual trials energy, and a lot of the athletes said this afterwards as well, like, people showed out for that race and were cheering. Like, there weren't a whole lot of quiet spots, they were saying, which is helpful. I mean, it was a looped course, so it makes it a little bit easier to get the crowds going and, like, get more of a crowd rather than it being, like, a point-to-point or something like that. But the vibes, at least for the trials, were good. Orlando, I mean, I wasn't at Disney or any of the parks, so, like, didn't get to experience that. But, like, you know what? I feel like considering all the drama surrounding the Orlando trials and, you know, the start time and the weather and all this stuff, like, I feel like this was a really good trials.
How was it for you to train out there? Because everyone knows you're running for this marathon.
I don't know if everyone knows that I'm running a marathon.
Well, we talked about it, so I feel like everyone knows. But how was it training for, like, how early did you feel like you had to get up and...
Well, I mean, like, the good thing is like the temperature, like in the morning, like wasn't super hot. It was like 40s, 50s, but definitely more humid than Austin, Texas. I can tell you that. Like, you could feel it in the air, just like the saturation.
Sounds muggy.
It was muggy at times. Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Well, Orlando in the books. What a great competitive meet for the USA Marathon Trials. But that was not all that took place. We had another big matchup. We talked about this a couple weeks ago once we found out that Noah Lyles and Fred Curley were going to face each other. So we're about to share our New Balance Grand Prix matchup takeaways because,
yes,
sweetheart, there were a lot of matchups that I felt like from that meet, I learned so much about individuals. And I feel like we just need to first start off with Noah and Fred because this was Fred's debut in the event.
Yes, yes.
The 60 meters, but I'm like, Fred runs the 100, 200. So for me, I'm like, okay, you're just running a shorter race. But Noah Lyles, this guy here, I'm just like, I'm not saying I'm in shock, but like, I feel like I'm kind of scared of Noah right now and yeah. what he's capable of doing. Cause there's fire emojis everywhere right now. And once the trials happen, we're going to see something special. As long as he continues to progress the way he's progressing. Again, the start was not the best. It was better than what it was in the previous race.
Yeah.
But Ashley, that top end speed was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, we saw him. If you were watching the Grand Prix, yeah. he goes 6:44 world lead, personal best, meet record to win the 60 at New Balance. And like you said, like if you're watching that race, like, again, like he didn't get out of the blocks very well. Again, no. That's still, but like, despite that, he still managed to hit that top end speed like this. And then, I mean, bam, he barely beat Akeem Blake there at the finish. And so it's like one of those things where seeing that part is scary. If he just fixes that start, which I know he said on the broadcast later, he's working on that start because everyone keeps telling him to work on his start. But
I have a thought, but I'm going to save it for later. Remind me.
You have a thought.
Well, you're not going to know. I'm going to have to make a note of it as we go, because I have a huge, huge thought.
Yeah. But let's talk about then Fred Curley, though.
Yes, let's talk about Fred.
You know, I will say, like, there were two semifinal rounds, and he won. He looked pretty good in his semifinal. Like, he won his heat. And, I mean, shoot, he went 6:55 in his first ever, like, 60-meter final indoors. Like, for someone that's never done that before, I do feel like that's a pretty, like, that's a solid mark, you know? Like, he's running against someone like freaking Noah Lyles. He's going to go 6:44. Like that was pretty good, but I'm just curious, like now where does he go from here?
Yeah. Makes me question. And again, it's still so early. Anything can happen between now and June this summer. Right. But the way how things are looking, I see Noah claiming the USA title as of right now.
Absolutely.
In this 100.
Absolutely.
I feel like there's still time to change things. And, like, Fred isn't far off. Like, 6:55, you know, solid. However, there just needs to be – I just feel like his start – something is off. Like, he's not
– it's just the reaction time. It's the reaction time. And then, yeah, like, aggressiveness getting out of the blocks.
Even, like,
yeah.
When I watched the race back and I just mm-hmm. saw the finish, it almost looked like – I don't want to say gave up, but it was almost like, okay. I'm not going to catch Noah Lyles.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Let me just get to the finish line type thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like Fred has the potential of going a lot faster.
I agree.
Than what he's showcasing us at this moment.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts on the men's 60?
Those were my thoughts. I mean, well, I mean, I will say, like, for Noah Lyles to go from his only other 60 meter this indoor season, it was his opener, which he ran that in Gainesville. I believe he ran 6:63, which... let's be honest, like, I wasn't super impressed with the 6:63, but now to go all the way to 6:44 and it's only February, I do feel like that's a good starting point for Noah. And again, just clean up some things, and I feel like it's going to be hard to beat him.
Yeah. All right. I want to move on to the 3K, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yes.
Because I watched that.
Yeah.
And I was just so impressed by Elle St. Pierre and Jessica Hall.
Yes.
I've had the pleasure of watching Jessica when she was running at Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to call her ESP because that's what the broadcast was calling Elle St. Pierre. I'm like, ESP, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
But ESP is just an incredible person. I took so much from her race, just knowing, like, she took a pause on her career to start her family. And here she is coming back and running the number two all-time in American history is amazing. And the fact that I think I was even – take away the time. The way how ESP ran that race was amazing.
Yep.
Because Jessica was adding pressure. There were multiple – like, at least two times where Jessica was – challenging ESP. Like, she got on the shoulder.
There was some contact.
There was some contact there. I was like, ESP is holding her ground, you know? But like the last 800 meters, I'm just like sitting at the edge of my chair, and the moves were made. And it was not until they came off that last turn that Jessica just like went sprinting for it. And she set a national Australian record there with an 8:24.93. And then ESP went number two all time, as I mentioned, 8:25.25. To put this in perspective of how close she was to breaking that American record, Alicia Monson won 825.05 yep. last year.
This close.
This close.
And I think the scary thing is, I mean, that was her indoor debut.
Right.
And also, like, you know, she had a child. Like, you know, she's coming, you know, into this after, you know, going through this just huge life moment, you know, and like, she's a badass mom. I'm going to say that right now, you know, and I think this is scary for, scary for American distance running that like this is
like she's in the mix.
She ran number two all time like on that like come summer
I'll have a front row seat.
That 1500 or 5k could be real spicy and we could see something I think really quick.
ESP is the real deal. Yep. If she wasn't in your thought of someone that could potentially make this USA team, she needs to be
At the top of your list now.
At top of your list in conversation because the race and how it played out and how she responded, she was so poised, in control. There wasn't even one moment where I felt like she lost her stride pattern or, like, lost her form at any time. Like, she was on it.
Yep.
And it's February.
Yep.
So give her a couple more months of training, more competition. ESP is my girl. She has my vote.
Your girl.
She has my vote. My final race that I would love to break down, just kind of get your thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a huge Grant Holloway fan. Huge fan of Grant. 60 meter hurdles. He's the GOAT. 7:35 for a world lead. Meet record. He ran his fastest opener ever. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he went 7:29 to break the world record just a few years ago, could we potentially see Grant do something even more extraordinary than 7:29?
I mean, I think we could based on what I saw this weekend. Like, he just, well, we know. I feel like it's a pretty well-known fact that, like, Grant Holloway loves indoor. Like, he loves
that indoor. Man loves the indoor season, World Indoor Championships. The man is going to be there.
Sometimes, like, I feel like, you know, not every pro does indoor. Like, sometimes it's just not a priority for them. But he's like, no, I'm going to run this indoor circuit. I'm going to run indoor worlds. They even mentioned on the broadcast, I believe, that he hasn't lost an indoor hurdles race since he was in high school. So the streak goes back like 60 something races or something ridiculous
Can
like that.
Can you imagine that?
So no wonder he likes indoor because he's never freaking lost.
But I'm sitting here thinking who would be the person that would take him down?
I don't know.
He's just so dominant in the 60 meter hurdles. Hurdles in general.
He can get over those hurdles quick and reach that top end speed and there's just like no one's going to hit him. He's not making mistakes. No one can catch him. So I really impressed by this. Again, the GOAT for the 60-meter hurdles indoors. Really excited to see what he's going to be doing for the rest of the season because we know USA's World Indoors is on his mind.
Literally. That's where he's going.
Yep.
Wow. Are there any other races you want to break down from New Balance that maybe I haven't mentioned that you would love to tap into?
Oh, gosh. Now I'm trying to think back. It was a wild week, and I have so many races that jumbled in my head. But yeah. To be honest, those are the ones that really stood
okay,
out.
Okay, awesome, because I was
and
like,
obviously, we already mentioned Hobbs Kessler.
Hobbs,
1500,
yes.
So,
perfect.
Yep, we're
awesome.
Good.
Okay, we tackled that. I like our little segment here. I call it our favorite moments from the weekend because it's kind of like just spitfire. Like,
yeah,
here's what happened, great things. My top two things, because you texted me about this, and I had to dive into the race video to find it, but it did happen.
Yes.
Julian Alfred, 22:16, world lead 200. This woman has not...
She's not playing.
She's not playing. She has not skipped a beat whatsoever.
And she also, I believe I saw, ran, I think, 7:04 in the 60 there as well. So she's in form. She's in shape. She's going to be running the 62 at Millrose this upcoming weekend, and I know she's really looking forward to that one.
I really applaud her because I know how challenging it could be for a lot of athletes to go from that collegiate system mm-hmm. to now running professionally. I don't even know what to say about 22:16. I'm just like, holy cow. I don't even feel like she even had an off season, like where she didn't do anything. I feel like she just won the Bowerman and like just did her thing and didn't skip a beat. 22:16, Iwa Sobota. If you know me, huge fan of her from Poland. 7:01 in the 60.
Yes.
World lead. Moving.
Yep. On the World Indoor Tour. That was really, again, that's moving and it's only February. So we're going to see those world lead times get into the sub-7 soon, I think.
Yes. Oh, how soon though?
Soon.
And I also feel like it's an Olympic year, so it's like so everything gets like the pace gets quicker.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like within the next couple of weeks, I mean, obviously we're gonna have stuff like Milrose and then USA's and Worlds. Like if it doesn't happen then, like
who do you think will be the first one to go under seven?
Oh, that's a tough question.
The way Iwa Sabota is running right now.
I feel like she's like the easy answer to put out there.
You think it's easy? Well,
for her. I mean, she went 701, so I feel like it's...
Yeah, but like I also can see Julian Alfred.
Yeah, true. They're both very powerful runners, like powerful sprinters, yes. Which I think serves them really well at the 60. We also have seen like, you know, ladies too, like Aaliyah Hobbs.
Yes, Mekhi Briscoe.
Yep, mm-hmm. I'll say Alfred.
Okay, here's my thing. Julian Alfred has top-end speed. She mm-hmm. is powerful.
Yeah.
She can also run a 200 meters. I feel like Iwa Sabota, no shots taken at her, but she is...
Better for the short
She
stuff.
Is a short mm-hmm. sprinter. Like, 100 meters, that is
yeah.
the event for her. So she has to have that explosion. She's like a Christian Coleman to me.
Yeah.
That rocket
okay.
start.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I'm going to go with... Iwa Sabota. And okay. I feel like she's been knocking at the six. She's been running she has a few races underneath her belt this year.
Yes.
So if I was to make a bet, then.
Okay, that's fair.
There we go.
We'll see how this plays out.
All right, Mets, world lead in that area. We've had three different world leaders come out of there. Femke Bol, just wow. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that race.
Oh, gosh.
She was by herself and just went 49.69 casual. It looked like...
In her opener, yeah.
It looked like she was at practice.
Scary.
To be very honest
so
with
scary.
You.
You know, Bol's always one. She actually, like, loves running the indoor season, I believe. So she's going to keep doing this and keep running, I believe. And, gosh, it makes it then really scary. It's like, all right, then when we get to outdoors and we're putting hurdles in front of her and you just, you know, add that into the mix, like how fast she's going to go. So
it's so scary.
She's
I'm actually
legit.
Scared.
She's legit. Mm-hmm.
I'm actually scared.
Yeah.
It's 49.69 season opener. Looked like it was looked like a jog.
Yep.
No competition.
I'm excited to see what she does for the rest of the season.
Goodness gracious. All right. Hello, Maya Nikaye outkicked Gemma Riki in the 800 with a 1:59.15. Great closing speed there. And then Hurit Meshesh runs an 8:20, 8:46 in the 3K. And then at the NCAA level, at the Mayo Invitational, you had Olivia Markovic run a mile lead timing and one of the top marks in collegiate history there. I forgot to write down her mile time. But it
4:27.
Was Thank you. 4:20. I knew it was 4:20-something. 4:27. So those were some of the highlights I saw. And, of course, USA Marathon trials were going on. Just... It was a very
busy weekend.
Very busy weekend.
We're trying to keep up with it and making sure people are informed.
Yes. All right. Our final meet of discussion. The meet where we're going to.
Yes.
We fly out tomorrow morning, heading to the Big Apple, the Milrose Games. So many well-known athletes are going to be running there. We're going to see some great matchups. So, Ashley, let's start off with our favorite athletes, maybe not necessarily top matchups, but maybe we have some of those big names that were like, okay, you have my attention. I'm going to be plugged into this event. Who are some of those individuals that you are going to make sure you don't miss?
Well, I'm looking down at this list and I'm realizing I like only wrote down distance athletes.
Did I write down sprinters?
Ah, I guess that's just where my mind goes half the time. But one, I'm Yared Nuguse. Like, I know we talked about this earlier with Hobbs Kessler, but he's going to be that headliner here in the Wanamaker Mile for the men at Milrose. We saw what he did last year. We saw him come. Yeah, I mean, he's so close to that world record. He's gone 3:47.3, I believe. That's the American record for the indoor mile. I'm just really curious to see what his mile speed is like right now, because we have seen him run a 5K. He did run the 5K at BU, the John Thomas Terry Classic. I believe he finished third in his heat, but he admitted to himself afterwards. He's like, I'm proud of the effort. I'm more of a mile guy anyway. Like, I know that's my event. He was just going up in distance and trying to take a shot at it.
Yeah.
So very curious to see where his leg speed is at this point and kind of where he's in that training block and see if he could perhaps chase down that 3:47.01 world record. I believe that's the world record.
Yeah. I want to piggyback on Yared Nuguse. I just want to know how the turtle's doing when I see him come through the mix zone. But yeah, defending champion in this event, American record holder. He's already threw it out there into the world that he is going for it. And when I had a chance to kind of like listen to one of his post-race interviews that he's done earlier, and he said he went to Millrose for the first time last year, and he was chasing after the American record of 3:47.38. And he said in an interview that he changed his mindset, and so he feels that this is really a possibility that this world record could fall. And once, you know, I saw where Hobbs Kessler is going to be in this race, I know Hobbs is going to be everyone's going to be fighting to the finish. Yeah. So that's why I asked him, I'm like, do you genuinely think a world record can fall?
And I mean, shoot, you look at all the other guys.
Look at the hitters in this race.
I mean, you have Hobbs Kessler, Sam Preikel, you have Yared Nuguse, Mario Garcia Romo, George Mills, which, you know, Hobbs mentioned that, I mean, he's gone sub 13 in the 5K already, so he has some of that aerobic fitness. You even have some of the, you know, the collegians trying to mix it up in here. You have with Liam Murphy from Villanova, Cooper Cheer as well. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on. Like, this could be a very quick race.
It's
going to
be quick. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Who are some of those other athletes that you're looking forward to also?
This is another guy that I think is, you know, on that distance side. But in the men's 2 mile, you're going to have Josh Kerr. Obviously, yes. He has been really in that spotlight, I feel like, since he, you know, upset Jakob Ingebrigtsen in the 1500 meters at Worlds. And he's been, you know, I feel like he's one where he's not afraid to be vocally confident about where he is with his training and where he is with his racing fitness. And it's been basically communicated to the media that this could be a world record attempt.
Just, I'm all for the world records. I really am.
If I see more world records this weekend, I'll be so happy.
Okay. Remember we talked about this one episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Every race, every meet that you've been to, a world record has fallen.
Not every meet, but a lot of meets.
95% of them last
year.
Also,
obviously, you went to Prefontaine and two went down there.
Yes.
Mondo and the Gudoff Sagai and the women's 5K.
Yes.
I saw the Kelvin Kiptum's world record. That,
yes.
That was pretty sick.
Yes.
All right, what's next? That's what I'm like. I'm like ready for the next world record.
So Ashley's going to be at the meet, y'all. So just know
hey,
the good vibes
the
are coming.
If I'm there, your world record's
world
going
down. Records are
going
to fall.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift to the sprint side.
Okay.
And this is, remember how I said I had a thought for you to remind me? I had to make a note that
this is what I wanted to talk about. Okay.
And someone actually, I don't know if you read the chat. Someone in the chat and I, we're on it. I think, who was it? All in the game. I think we're all on the same. I'm there with you. Okay, I feel like I have to shift. Remember how we were talking about Noah Lyles?
Yeah.
If there's one person right now who I think could potentially be like, Noah, one moment. You have not seen me run yet. It's Christian Coleman in this 60.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I'm Christian Coleman and I'm watching, I don't know if he's watching Noah Lyles or not. He's probably not. But if he's hearing through the news that, okay, Noah's start is still not on point, but he does have that closing end speed. Christian Coleman is the king of the dry phase and the block starts. Christian Coleman is not going to miss a beat. This man's about to get out. So I'm just curious on how fast Christian Coleman is going to perform at Millrose. And he, I think, is going to set the tone, and it's going to be like, hey, what's up? Like, congratulations. Great racing.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all.
The dry phase is going to go out 30, 40 meters. He has to hold up. Christian Coleman, we know, can run 100.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and honestly, if you look at how he runs his hundreds, he always does better in the first part of the race, like you said, because he can freaking get out of the blocks.
It's catch me if you can.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like the 60-meter could really suit him here. And I'm looking at the start list right now, like, who he's going to be competing against. Akeem Blake, who just, you know, barely took second to Noah Lyles this weekend. You're going to have Hakeem Sonny Brown, who's always been very good representing Japan. Andre DeGrasse. Shakir Williams,
Andre DeGrasse.
Yeah, uh-huh. However, I did see Andre DeGrasse run a 60. I can't remember which World Indoor Tour meet it was. Wasn't great, but he is kind of more of a 200 runner, I feel like, anyways, in my mind.
He's a dark horse for me, and I know that probably sounds so bad. I know over the last several years, it's just kind of been a little bit inconsistent, and then he just, like, popped off, like, again last year.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about him in a 60, because he's, like, Noah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Noah changed the whole conversation last year, but Noah is definitely strong in that 200. I feel like Andre DeGrasse is right there.
Agreed.
When it comes to strength.
Mm-hmm.
The 60 is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
The 60 is going to be interesting.
I will say, I do expect Coleman here to win this race. Oh, Coleman? Like, for sure.
For me, I'm looking at the time. Christian Coleman, I know he's going to get out there, but I'm just.
What's the time?
I'm thinking, how fast is he going to go?
Yeah. So
I'm excited for the 60.
Yes, for sure. All
right. Are there any other athletes that you're excited for?
I believe I also wrote down Alicia Munson, which we're going to see running, and I'm really excited about that. She's going to be in the 2 mile, I believe. I hope I wrote that down right. Yes, the women's 2 mile. I know she's done some pacing work already this season and for some of the meets at BU, but I'm really excited to see her actually go out there and race a 2 mile. You're also going to have Nikki Hiltz in that race, Emily Infield, Courtney Wayman, who we just saw had a big 5K performance at the Terrier Classic. You're also going to have Laura Muir from Great Britain, who's been a stud, you know, at that 1500 meter distance on the international level for such a long time.
Yes. So essentially, this whole meet's just going to be on fire, even at the high school level.
True. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Our guy Jonathan Sims, Quincy Wilson in that 600.
You know, I'm real excited for that one.
Deja Hodge is going to be
in the 300. I saw, and I think maybe in the 60 as well. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Overall, it's going to be such a.
You're
great
also going to have Elisa Samuels, who as one of the.
Yeah, she's
going
to be in that pro field.
I believe the only high schooler I saw listed that's going to be in a pro field. She'll be in that women's 60 meter hurdles, which will be really exciting for her to get that experience running against pros.
Yes, so it's going to be extraordinary on both levels, which is going to be great. All right, before we wrap up our show, we're going to talk about our favorite matchup. So these are the races or the events that we're just so excited to see because it's just so much of a heavy hitter. I know. The 2 mile is something that you're definitely looking forward to. I think for me, in the 300 meters, I talked about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Kalitha Diggs, mm-hmm. the 2002 U.S. and NCAA champion in the 400 meters, faces Rashid Adeleke, the 6-time Irish national record holder and 4th-place finisher in Budapest in the 400 meters. So we have 2 quarter-milers about to go at it. In this 300.
I'm glad you brought that one up because that's going to be real spicy. We've already seen Rashida run really, really well.
Yes. In New Mexico. Yes. Correct.
I mean, shoot, she's a 400 runner and she went like 7-1.
Speed
in the
is
60,
there.
Which I'm like, dang, if she's running 7-1 that 60, like getting out of that blocks and like hitting some of that top end speed. And then, you know, she can put together all the endurance pieces that I'm sure she already has being a 400 meter specialist, like, she's going to be on it this year. So I'm really excited for that. And then Talitha Diggs.
It's Talitha Diggs.
We're big fans of Talitha Diggs.
Huge fans of Talitha.
She's great at the NCAA level, and she has that, you know, experience competing for Team USA, and I'm really excited to see what she does here.
Yeah. So those are, I feel like, the top two names going into it, but also in that Milrose 300-meter field is going to be Candace McLeod, the Olympic bronze medalist, and she ran on the 4x4, and then Leah Anderson, who finished 3rd at Milrose last year. So that kind of rounds out your 300-meter field. Yes.
Do you want me to put a matchup in there? I know we're going over matchups.
Yeah. What do you have a matchup?
Yes, I do.
What's your matchup?
All right. My matchup that I'm really excited to now is looking at the women's Wanamaker mile. I know we talked about the men's.
Yes.
But the women's, you're going to have Elle St. Pierre.
Yes.
Danny Jones, Jessica Hull, Josette Andrews. I mean, just so many names. You're also going to have Maya Ramsden, who is, you know, with Harvard. She's going to be running in this as well. She won the 1500 meters, I believe, at NCAA outdoors last year. So
I'm
that was gonna be exciting.
ESP
Anna Camp Bennett
right
as well. Mm-hmm.
Team ESP at the moment. So,
yeah. So that'll be spicy.
Spicy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I think is quite interesting too is the men's pole vault competition. This is the first time that this event has taken place at Milrose since 2014.
I like this
so
edition.
A decade.
Mm-hmm.
I am all for it.
Yes.
And part of the field is going to be Casey Littlefoot and Chris Nielsen, who we're also huge fans of. And
yeah, Casey Lightfoot and Chris Nielsen, it's going to be an interesting matchup there for sure. I mean, they're two of the top guys in that space.
Did I say Littlefield?
Yeah, I think you said Littlefield.
Wow, I definitely read Lightfoot.
Wow,
that's how you know where my brain is. Littlefield. There's a Kaylee Littlefield in high school that we talk about often. Wow, and I realized after you said Lightfoot, that
you're
like, I was
like,
wait, did I say Lightfoot or Littlefield? Goodness gracious. Casey Lightfoot. Thank you, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Chris Nielsen. Looking forward to the pole vault matchup.
Yes.
It's going to be exciting. Lots of great matchups. Goodness gracious. Individuals. So this is going to be a sizzling meet across the board.
That is for sure.
Ashley, off the top of your head, if you can think of any, are there any?
There's a lot to watch this weekend. I know what you're about to ask me.
We'll break us down on the top events to watch on the calendar.
Yes.
This weekend, this upcoming weekend.
Flow Track, we have a crap ton of huge events to watch this weekend. Let's just go through the list. I have it pulled up right now. You're going to want to tune in for the David Hemery Valentine Invitational in BU.
Yes.
That's going to be stacked. Yes. Really excited for that. We also have the Don Kirby Elite Invitational in Albuquerque. We're also going to have people on the ground there getting content. So really excited for that one. You're also going to have some meets in Florida, I believe, and some various high school state championships. And then we still have the World Indoor Tour going.
Yes.
Which has been really cool to see those events and having those events live on Flow Track. So, get to see a bunch of those international athletes competing on the World Indoor Tour. So there's just so much going on.
It's a sigh. It was just like, I think we got it all out there. It's just an eventful, I feel like after once January came, it's just like full throttle all the way to the end. And it's just going to be nonstop until the Olympics and then settles down.
It's a very big year.
It's a huge year, and I'm embracing every moment of it.
I'm glad you're doing that.
I'm so happy about it,
too. Yes,
which is awesome. Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us live, as always, on YouTube here on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Central Time. Please like, subscribe, share this with your friends, your family, because Ashley and I, we just love talking about track. It's our life. Yeah. We sleep, breathe, eat.
I have one thing to put out there that I forgot to mention. Obviously, we mentioned the live streams, but I know it's been kind of, it's known now we're bringing out back Workout Wednesdays. We have a new Workout Wednesday to watch today. Go watch. We were able to hang out with Julian Alfred, Dina Asher-Smith at a practice that they did doing some 150s and wickets at University of Texas. So check that out on YouTube or the site.
Yes.
It's pretty spicy. And I know we were talking about them already. So
yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
but
I appreciate
plugging it out there.
The plug for Workout Wednesdays, because we are bringing them back. More are to come. We're super, super stoked for them as well. So thank you guys so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week. If you're also in New York City, flag Ashley and I down.
Yes.
Say hello, because we want to say hi. Enjoy the rest of your week, y'all.